Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good morning. Welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. It's Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, this segment is supposed to be on Myron Butler, musician artist out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, recording artist. I'm going to play a couple of tracks of his songs, and then we'll be back. So, again, we'll be back in a moment. We're going to take a station break, play a commercials from our sponsor, and then we're going to go play a couple of his tunes, his music, and hopefully get into the interview. So thank you guys for listening, and I'm going to go ahead and start the commercial.
You're listening to the Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, Myron.
How's it going?
Great. Thank you for joining the program today. Give me 1 second real quick. I guess to begin with, again, thank you for coming on the program today, the Core Business Show. And I guess to begin with, kind of tell us, the audience, about yourself. They always comment and say, hey, we like to hear them to say exactly. We know what we read. We just like to get a personal view. And if you don't mind, give us a personal view. Now, where are you from, and how did you come into music?
Well, originally I was born in a small town in Florida called Bradenton. It's about 30 minutes from Tampa. Began music at a very young age in my life, started playing piano when I was 9 years old and directing the choir, the Sunday school, and playing for the Sunshine Band, writing songs when I was 9 or 10 years old as well. Then when I was in middle school, I moved to Dallas, Texas. My mother and I moved to Dallas, Texas. There I attended an arts high school. I kind of continued my musical studies. There I joined a community choir called the DFW Mass Choir when I was a junior in high school. Met up and linked up with Kirk Franklin, who was one of the directors for that choir. And he just kind of took me under his wing and started, you know, songwriting. At that point, I had, you know, written for the DFW Mass Choir and written for Kirk Franklin's Christmas record and Kimberell and Minna Standard and some other artists. But I started off as a songwriter. And being a part of, was a part of God's Property and New Nation and pretty much every record that Kirk did from that point on. And that kind of led into Myron Butler and Levi and ultimately where I am today.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, amazing story. Yeah, I remember God's Property. I was on the Bobby Jones Show, I think, in 1997. And I remember God's Property was just coming out, and they came on his show. It was some church in Florida. He was doing the taping at, and it was focusing on quartets. And then this young adult choir we never heard of before came out. And Kirk wasn't there. I think it was just the group was there. And they sung My Life Was in Your Hands. I mean, we're just blown away with the sound and the style of music. And then they announced it with God's Property. And it was, like I said, it was amazing. We were just in shock. We never heard a group sound like that with all the power and the energy. And then the rest is history. But it made a traumatic effect to those people that was in that building. It was about the same size as the Potter's House. But like I said, it was just amazing hearing that live for the first time. So
yeah,
what inspired you? I'm not sure where you either. I know, I forgot what part of Florida. I don't know if it was Coral Spring, but it was like a building like the Potter's House, some church.
I believe it was Lakeland. I think you're talking about it was the Carpenter's Church, because I vividly remember that Bobby Jones. I want to say it was the Carpenter's Church down there. I want to say it's somewhere close to Lakeland.
I think you're right. And it's a big building, and it was during, I think we were there for like a couple of days. And the reason I was there, the producer of the show, and I don't know if you've seen No Bishop. Bishop is one of the organists there with Bobby Jones. His wife is the producer, and he has like the old fashioned curly hair, you know, from the 60s and 70s.
Right.
Yeah, Bishop is amazing. So I was there because he was coming in with a community group when I was in Kansas, and his aunt is over a community group there, and I was part of that, and then we landed there. But like I said, the sound was incredible, totally incredible. We've never heard anything like that. But what inspired you as a songwriter to write your music? I know a lot of people say they have several ways they write their music. Some write in the middle of the night. Some of them just come in pieces. And when Hawkins mentioned a couple months ago, he said, I just sit at the piano and it just comes to me, the whole song. How do you write your music?
Well, I would probably have to agree with those that, you know, that say that it comes in many different forms. For me, sometimes I will sit down at the piano and it'll all come in one swoop. Then there are other times that bits and pieces will come. Maybe a title to a song will come, or maybe a great melody will pop in my head and I'll record it. And I just kind of build it from there. But for me, you know, people often ask, where do you find the inspiration? And for me, the inspiration comes from everywhere. It comes from the Word of God. It comes from my family. It comes from sermons that my pastor preaches. It comes from world events. Just all of those things combine to inspire me to write, you know, songs, and, you know, and it greatly affects how I approach songwriting. But I often tell songwriters, because I just taught a class down at our Pastors and Leaders Conference, for me, I believe that songwriting is both a gift, being that it's God-given, and a craft, something that you work
wow.
on, that you use techniques to become better at. So for me, you know, I will encourage young songwriters to, number one, always write. Number two, find books that will, you know, deal with the technique of songwriting, because to me, there is a technique and there is a craft to it as well. But I find inspiration in everything.
Wow. So the technique and the craft, I mean, we have, I think one of the challenges of songwriters, not so much so to today, but in the past, and we still have that, is that the theology of the songs, I think some composer would complain about, it's a great tune, and it's a great, it's a good song, but the only thing is sometimes it's kind of, the theology is not all the way there, is something is missing, and really a person had to go back and rewrite the text. It's usually always a text issue. What advice you say to them as they have a technique and their own individual style, how to make sure that the text is correct, is theology, the theology is in there, is sound? Is that making sense?
Yes, it is completely.
Because if you know, you're a teenager, you don't have that full experience. So
exactly.
You're going to have to lean on somebody.
Well, and that's what I think. One of the other statements that I make that I believe that I've heard said, and I continue to say it, is that to me, I think, you know, the best song or the best songs are rewritten and not necessarily written. And I mean that from the standpoint of, you know, we would, as a songwriter, we would all love to say, I wrote this song in 5 minutes, and that song went on to be an epic hit that blessed the world and sold all these, whatever. But more times than not, you will have to, you know, come write the song, take a minute away from the song, come back to the song, you know, whether it's, you know, re-listening to the melody or re-listening to harmony. But when we talk about gospel music, you know, our music is lyric-based. You know, for me, when somebody says they have a great song, I say, well, don't sing it to me, just tell me the lyrics. Because for me, our songs are based off the good news of Jesus Christ and the, you know, and the Bible. And I think it doesn't necessarily, because everybody doesn't have, you know, mentors who are great songwriters at their disposal. But what I do believe songwriters have are ministers and pastors in the local churches, where they could take not necessarily the song structure or the harmony or the melody of the song, but they can take the lyrics of the song and say, Pastor, you know, I'm just wanting to make sure that my lyrics are sound from a theological standpoint, that they really line
wow.
up from the word or with the word. And, you know, if you don't have that person, or if you don't have access to your pastor, what I would encourage everyone to do is to take their song and do a Bible study on their song. You know, if their song is talking about the faithfulness of God, or if their song is talking about the Trinity, or if their song is talking about whatever, you know, all these theological concepts, to open up the Bible yourself and to, number one, commit it to prayer. You know, confess, God, I don't have anyone that I can lean on from an understanding standpoint, so I am trusting you, I am leaning on you to give me understanding, because, you know, I believe what spirit touches spirit, and I think if you have the right heart in your heart to please God through the song, and you're not just wanting to just, you know, write something haphazardly, you want to write something that can bless the body, but also that is congruent to the word of God, that if you commit that to prayer, that God will, number one, enlighten you and give you revelation concerning that. But I believe that God will also bring people into your life that you could go to and get understanding in areas that you may not be as well versed in.
Wow, that's powerful there. Are there any conferences? I know you just mentioned the conference at the top of the hour. Conferences, like you were involved with the pastor in the leadership conference, but are there any other conferences that young songwriters and young artists can go? I know you have GMWA, but you have like two dimensions of that. Some younger musicians like GMWA, some of them don't, because I think they feel that it limits them, and the music, what they want, right, is for a smaller ensemble than versus a larger group. And it's kind of and some people think of it as, if it's been going on for so long, it's old. Then you have someone who wants to jump into something new. Are there anything that beyond GMWA they can go to and get the mentorship that they can get that will work and help them develop as an artist?
Well, what I will be is completely honest. What I think that people can get, because I do understand that I've been going to or been, you know, familiar with GMWA since 1992. So I understand the dynamics and all of that. There are some performance rights organizations. We call them PROs. And the purpose of a PRO is basically to pay the writer and the publisher royalties when their songs are played on the radio, or the songs are performed in any kind of public venue, whether it be elevator music, whether it be music that's played in a restaurant or anything like that. Those three PRO organizations are BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. Now, what all three of the organizations offer, they offer different symposiums, they offer different workshops that are geared to songwriting, they're geared to, you know, producers and networking opportunities. But what I would say to the listeners is I think that those symposiums and those workshops are great sources of information. You may or may not be able to find a mentor in those environments, so I don't want to give anyone unrealistic expectations. It's not like you're going to go to those and be able to say, you know, I hooked up with John Doe and John Doe is my mentor, but you will be able to go to those workshops and those symposiums and find a wealth of knowledge. And I think that's also, I think the responsibility of becoming a great songwriter is twofold. Yes, mentorship is great, but I think you as a songwriter have got to take some of that responsibility on your shoulders and seek out the information and utilize the information. But those three are great outlets. You can go to BMI.com. ASCAP is just the letters ASCAP.com, and CSAC is FESAC.com. And you know, their websites are full of information where people can go through and see different, you know, and, you know, it's sad, but most times the workshops are either in Nashville, Atlanta, Los Angeles, or New York. So if you're not in those regions, you're more than likely going to have to travel there. But those are going to be the major outlets, because in gospel, there really aren't any songwriter-specific workshops or things like that are out there. I don't know, maybe I'll start one or something like that. but it's something that is definitely needed. The information is there. You just got to seek out that information.
Wow, that's powerful on there. So BNI, CSAC, and ASCAP. And one thing Edwin did, Hawkins did mention, he said, well, today artists get paid, because we didn't know. We heard of these things, but nobody was there to guide us with that. And he said one thing he really liked about the industry today, even though it's evolving, but we do have these organizations they can reach out to a lot easier, and they can get paid, bottom line. So that's a great benefit in versus when he first started. Talking about your particular music itself, who inspired you?
Oh, man. Of course, Kirk Franklin, who, you know, has been my mentor since I started. But people like Edwin and Walter Hawkins and Thomas Whitfield and the Clark Sisters and Milton Brunson and the Thomas Community of Singers. I'm a musician. So, you know, when I was in art school, we listened to, you know, jazz music. So, you know, from a jazz standpoint, the Singers Unlimited and Bill Evans and Thelonious Monk and Art Tatum and all these jazz musicians really influenced, I believe, how I hear, you know, how I hear melody, how I hear harmony. But those would be, you know, those integral influences in my life.
Mm-hmm. And if you, someone asked me on here, are you a traditionalist or are you a contemporary? So I'm just assuming that your particular music, I know your music style is today, is more modern, but the music you listen to that inspire you, is it more of a mixture, or is it more leaned towards traditional, or if it's leaned towards more contemporary?
For me, I would probably be a hybrid. You know, I listen to traditional music, like I said, Thomas Whitfield, who's, you know, mm-hmm. at the beginning of gospel music, and Walter and Edwin Hawkins, even though, you know, Edwin Hawkins is the father of contemporary music, now music has evolved, and so now we look at that as, you know, sort of traditional in a sense. But for me, I'll listen to anything from, Walter Edwin or Jermaine Hawkins all the way up to, you know, Jay Moss or, you know, any of the other contemporary artists that are doing music today. So for me, I'm kind of a hybrid. It's not like it's all traditional or all contemporary. For me, it's a little bit, I glean from both.
Okay. And what inspires you is from both as well?
Well, for me, the traditional music, I think that lyrically, for me, I think traditional lyrics are what captivate me. You know, the simplicity and the heart behind the lyric of a hymn, you know, draw me nearer, I am thine, O Lord, I have heard thy voice, and it told thy love to me. You know, just lyrics like that. So from a traditional sense, it would be, you know, the lyrical content. What I like about the contemporary music, or what I pull from contemporary music, is just the ever-evolvingness of the music itself, you know, and how, you know, we're hearing different harmonies and how we're approaching things differently, you know, from a musical standpoint. So, you know, those would probably be the things that I like in each respective genre.
Wow. Dealing with the music today, I know things are really, really have changed within the last 5 years. What do you think where we headed towards with the advent of praise and worship is more mainstream now in the black church? Or you think we're in this mode that we're really evolving? Now we have traditional, but we're kind of taking the best traditional songs that we know and bringing them, but we our set of focus now or music as of hymns, are we really in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and slowly that hymn book is just going by the wayside, and we would just keep maybe the top five, I would say probably the top 25 songs or 50 songs that we would sing for communion, sing for this and that. That's always going to be our staples. But, however, our hymn book, in one sense, has moved from out of the old 100s and the old national hymn book to here we are today.
Right. And to me, that would speak to the fact that music does evolve. I think in the evolution of music, and specifically gospel music, I think that the hymns are something that we can't forget. I think even mm-hmm. in our pursuit to be progressive and our pursuit to be, you know, cutting edge, I think that we can't become so progressive that we discard what we grew up or the foundation. It would, you know, it would almost be, you know, for us to say that we're going to discard the Old Testament once the New Testament came, you know, and I think that we can't do that. I do, you know, understand that in our church services today, that praise and worship is more congregational. And a lot of times we are inviting people into our churches who have never been in church before. And that's the only way you're going to even have a knowledge of the hymn, How Great Thou Art. You know, if you're a new convert, you've never heard that song. But I think that even, I think that I understand that, but that can't be the excuse for us to throw them away. I think that music should be all-encompassing, and that music, even as a minister of music in a church myself, I understood, you know, when I first started playing in churches, that the music that I present in church has to feed the whole body of the church. It can't just be, you know, the cutting-edge contemporary praise and worship, CCM praise and worship music, nor can it just be every hymn that's in the hymn book. It has to be all-encompassing so that all of the needs of the entire body are met. So for me, I think that I see the music evolving. I see, you know, we are getting, we're becoming more cutting edge. I love the fact, once again, like I said earlier, that the praise and worship music is congregational, because I think a lot of times what I've seen being a minister of music myself is that inside the music service portion of the service, the congregation is limited to being just a spectator, as opposed to the whole congregation, the platform and the congregation singing to God together as one. And I think that to me was not what I believe God wants us to do. I don't think that the congregation should just come and sit there and watch it like it's a movie. You know, I think that it, you know, everyone should participate. So that's what I love about, you know, the praise and worship music, that it's simple, that it's engaging, and that people can feel a part, and we can all offer praise to God as one. But I think that even in that, you know, in music evolving on that side, that's not justification to just let go of the hymns.
Wow. And talking about you as Ministry of Music, and then we're going to talk about a little bit more about your career and business portion of it. But when you came in, I'm not sure what your experiences when you came to the Potter's House, leading a ministry like that, what are the really challenges that you had to face? Is over the numbers or the drive? As a minister of music of a church like that, what type of how do you actually operate something on that scale?
With a lot of help. Because yes, the sheer size of it is mammoth by itself. So, you know, you go from being a minister of music or a musician or a choir director for a church, you know, where there are 25 choir members, and now you're at a church where there are 100 plus choir members. So just the sheer volume of people creates more of a responsibility that you have to carry. Also, I think just, and this is not a negative thing, but I think being a minister of music at a church like that, where there are quite a few eyes that are always on the church, looking for direction, looking to see how the Potter's House does it. For me, it is always the pursuit to always be in tune with what God is having me to say, not just wanting to do a song because it's, you know, in top five on radio and I like the song, but is this song the song that God is saying or calling for us to speak or sing right now in this moment? So for me, that you have to have a consistently attentive ear to what God is saying. So for me, just the sheer number and volume of people, but also the responsibility of, and not to say that the person in a smaller church doesn't have that same level of responsibility, but just that there are so many eyes that are on the church. You know, I get emails and people go to the website and they say, you know, we're watching you over in Africa, and we, you know, we saw and we love that. Oh, you know, they'll send me a Facebook message from Africa asking me about the song that I did this past Sunday. So that lets me know the sheer, you know, reach of the church, you know, extends, you know, in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex or even Texas, that it reaches across the world and on a very consistent or, you know, it's not like, oh, we like the song you did 2 months ago. They're responding, you know, if we sing on Sunday, they're responding on Monday or Tuesday. So just that level of responsibility and knowing that those eyes are watching causes you to want to make sure, not that you're not going to make a mistake, because you will, you know, and I don't want to send that message out to ministers of music that you can't make a mistake, but I think the pursuit should be, God, what are you having us to say right now?
You know, the old adage, how do you convey that to a choir who wants to do the stuff on the radio? And to explain them in a pastoral way, say, that's not always why we're here. What do you say? Because I know you face that all the time. Hey, I heard such and such, and it just really speaks to me, or speak to my friend, too. And but in hindsight, that's not really good for worship as a community.
Exactly. For me, it's about priority. You know, when I talk to singers and musicians, what I tell them is that we are not gifted to appease our own desires. We are gifted to serve. And at the end of the day, my desires have to die, and the needs of the people has to be paramount and priority. And when that is the case, then I can't justify or even, you know, acquiesce on a request from someone to do a song just because they like it. You know, there are even some of my Potter's House choir members ask me, you know, we want to do some of the songs from your record. And, you know, I realize that there are some songs on my record that may not be conducive in a Sunday morning service, you know, not to say that they're bad songs, not to say that they're not biblically based songs, but just inside of a traditional Sunday morning service, the songs are not going to be what I believe God has called for that moment. So at the end of the day, I've got to die to, you know, the desire of wanting to do my own songs, you know, even the more just wanting to do a song because it's in the top five on radio. For me, you know, the minister of music's job is to identify the sound of his or her house and present music and deliver music that is going to speak to that body and feed that body. And that has to be the ultimate motive. Anything else, you know, is a plan for disaster.
Wow. So when you go into day-to-day operations, what is it like when you arrive there, you have your band rehearsal, you have your choir rehearsal, you have your meeting with your staff? What is the day-to-day for you there at the Potter's House?
Well, for me, the day-to-day is exactly that. My choir, the Potter's House Choir, sings twice a month, so we rehearse on Saturday. So we rehearse the Saturday before the first Sunday and the Saturday before the third Sunday. So, you know, our rehearsals are really kind of, you know, intense because we only rehearse two times a month, so they're hour and a half, almost two-hour rehearsals at that point. Dealing with my, you know, choir staff, choir liaison, choir section leaders that can disseminate information and get information out to the choir members. But also, you know, our church is always doing something, whether it's a conference, whether it's manpower, a woman that are loose, or, you know, pastor and leaders or whatever. So there's always needs that the music department has to meet. So for me, those day-to-day operation and operation meetings are, you know, the nuts and bolts of how we get things done. So for me, you know, if someone asked me how do I do it, you know, having a family, being the minister of music at a church, also doing records on my own, you know, I tell them, you know, having grown into this, I don't think that there are 10 steps to being able to manage, you know, your schedule. I think for me, it's about prioritizing and, you know, carving out specific time in the day to attend to, you know, all of those different things, whether it be responding to emails, whether it be preparing songs, whether it be, you know, getting music out to musicians, all of that, whether it be, you know, doing radio interviews or whether it be doing promotional appearances for the record that I have out. For me, it's about prioritizing and being organized and committing your plans to God and saying, God, this is what I have to do. Give me the grace to accomplish all of this. But it's, there are no black and white 10 steps to, you know, being able to handle a grueling schedule. You just have to look at it from an individual standpoint of what you have to accomplish and, you know, be responsible as it relates to time.
Wow. And so your the Padres House Choir sings twice a month, and then there are alternating groups that sings the other Sundays?
That is correct. So at the Potter's House, we have the Potter's House Choir that sings on first and third, and then we have the Bishop's Choir, which sings second and fourth. More times than not, whenever there is a fifth Sunday, we'll have special music, or my choir will sing, or we just kind of play that one by ear, given that we are rebuilding our youth ministries, and the youth ministries would normally take that fifth Sunday. So we kind of play the fifth Sundays by ear, but that's pretty much the schedule of how we've make it through our calendar year.
Okay. When you have, for example, you have satellite campuses in I believe Plano and Fort Worth. So you within your staff, you have like a sub staff that handles those other campuses?
Well, actually, we have staffed those two satellite locations. Our north location, where Pastor Cheryl Brady is the pastor, we've staffed that from a music standpoint. They also have a praise team, and they're building up their choir that is completely staffed with people that are out there. And the same applies to our location in Fort Worth. We have our own, excuse me, separate staff of musicians that operate the Fort Worth campus, as well as a Fort Worth worship leader that handles all of the vocalists there, and we've kind of got it up and running to a point now to where the satellite campuses can kind of run their campus with their own system, so it's not like the main campus has to send out instruction and kind of you know, macro manage those satellite locations. They run those on their own.
Okay, and then also you have something in Denver as well, so that's totally staffed on its own.
Exactly.
Okay. And I know Bishop's talked about purpose and provision and passion message, I think, on New Year's Eve, and he continued to talk about it for the whole month of January. With those particular three words of your passion, your provision, your purpose, how do you see that? I know you. I'm sure you had time to reflect on that. I mean, we've talked about it within this past top of the hour. How do you see that for yourself? Because I mean, not only you're at this mega church. I mean, you won a Grammy. You're producing. You have a group. How does that play a part in discerning who you are?
Well, for me, you know, the passion and purpose. You know, for me, purpose is very important and integral in my life. You know, it is, and I think in the mind and in the life of everyone wants to know what's my purpose, what was I created to do, you know. And once you find that, once you recognize that, then to me, passion and provision flow out of that. For me,
wow.
I tell people that when I was, you know, a kid, I would sit in church when I was a little boy in Florida. I would sit next to the organ player, and I would sit there and just gaze at the organ player for the entire service. This was nothing my mother or my grandparents, they didn't, you know, provoke me to do that. It was something inside of me that I didn't even understand at that point. You know, I knew music was something that I liked to do, but it wasn't that anyone forced me to do it or I was, you know, making this conscious effort to do this. It was something on the inside of me that connected with that music. And later on, I realized that music was directly connected to my purpose. And now people ask me, there's like, you know, there's some people that I come in contact with that, you know, don't know what I do or, you know, have never met me before. And they're like, so what else do you do? And I'm like, music is all I do. Music is all I do. So for me, the purpose, you know, and I would even go as far to say that to me, I understand that music is not my only purpose. I understand that it is a very big part of my purpose, but it is only one dimension or one facet of it. But for me, out of that passion and the fervor and the drive with which I do or complete my purpose flows out of that. And ultimately, to me or for me, it has a direct connection to my provision, you know, whether it is, you know, dreams that I have that I want to accomplish or whether it is, you know, simply providing for my family flows out of that purpose and passion. So for me, I've seen that, you know, I've seen that tangible in my life. And so for me, I think it begins, even as Bishop talked about on the life class with Oprah, you know, everybody wants to know what's my purpose, what is it that I'm supposed to do, you know, and ultimately, I don't think anyone can answer that question for you but God, but I do believe that once you find it, that passion and provision flow out of it.
Wow. And in developing your career, I mean, it is, I mean, besides having your job at the Potter's House, I mean, how do you manage? I'm sure you have a publicist and, you know, of course you have a manager. And as a business yourself, how do you manage your career as a business? I mean, do you have someone to do all your publicity, someone who handles your scheduling? You have a person who actually is your manager. How do you function, put all those things together?
Well, see, and that's the thing for me. Well, the first question, one of the upsides is that I'm on EMI Gospel. So EMI Gospel handles everything from publicity to promotions to, you know, new ventures or new opportunities that are out there. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, one of – because I'm a hands-on guy. You know, I've been doing this since – 96 or 97. So for me, it really is, I set goals for the year. You know, if there is a new record that I'm going to record on myself, you know, I kind of like to know that at least a year ahead or at least a year and a half so that I can plan and kind of structure things from a business standpoint so that that is easy for me to do from a business standpoint and the business part of it doesn't hinder the creative part of it. So for me, if it's a record, I'm going to play a record on myself. I'm going to plan it out at least a year in advance. Mm-hmm. I'm also a producer. So like this year, right now, I'm currently in the middle of producing a record for Tamela Mann and getting ready to produce a record for Sherry Jones Moffitt as well. So for me, it's about having planning meetings with those artists so that I can plan out, you know, create a timeline, set a date, and then kind of back in the schedule as it relates to accomplishing that record from, you know, into that as well. So, you know, from booking, scheduling, you know, really, you know, God has blessed me with a wife that I could have never imagined. You know, she handles the schedule. She's able to, whether it's radio interviews or performance dates or, you know, workshops or things I have to do with the church, she kind of helps me keep the schedule intact. So for me, luckily, you know, I'm able to really handle it and manage it, you know, between she, myself, and the label. You know, and I've got, you know, other road managers that travel with me when I go out to make things, you know, easy for me. But for me, you know, what I have to do for the year, I like to plan it at least, if I can, on a yearly basis so that I can say, hey, for the month of June and July, I'm getting ready for a live record. So, you know, 2 to 3 months before then, I know that I can block off time so that I can devote to that. So for me, it's just about assembling a team. And my team is small because I'm such a hands-on guy.
And BMI take care of all the other stuff, and it's good that your wife take care of all your day-to-day. It's going to make life a lot, and should make her involvement. And when you negotiate a contract, what was it like negotiating the contract with EMI?
Well, you know, for me, it was more simple than, and that's why I don't like to use my example, because my example is not the norm. But like I said, I had written for Smokey Norfolk. I had written for Bishop Jakes and the Potter's House. This was about almost 10 years ago. I had written for LeJune Thompson, and all of those were EMI gospel artists. And so I had Levi, and we had recorded a local performance that we did. There was some sort of concert that Kirk was doing, and we recorded, we videoed the performance, and we sent it, or I sent it to EMI, to Ken Pennell over at EMI, and it was as simple as when he saw, you know, the DVD, he looked at the track record and resume of music that I had done. He sent me back just a short response and said, let's do a deal, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, that's not typical, you know. And so that's why I really don't like to use my example. I mean, I like to be transparent, but I don't want to ever give off the unrealistic.
That's that easy.
Right, that is that easy, because for everyone it won't be. But what I do tell artists, songwriters, and producers is that there is power in your track record or in your resume. So, you know, let that be the thing that will go and speak for you when you may not have, you know, the power to speak for yourself, because people are watching. You know, we all know we live in the information age. So you can Google somebody and see all the work that they've done, you know, with the click of a mouse. So at that point, that will speak for you and will sometimes open up doors that you don't even have the power to open yourself.
Wow. Last couple of questions regarding if there's a song that speaks to you, give you a chance to reflect on that for a second. What song will that be? And before we say that, let's go to how you like to – where will you like to be in the next 10 years, and how you like to be remembered in 100 years?
Wow. In the next,
I don't know which one is easier.
Both of those are hard. I'm going to try my best. In the next 10 years, I would like to still be doing music. I would like to have a platform that I could use to catapult aspiring artists and songwriters. I would like to have a viable publishing company that I can pass on to my children. I would love to have, I do believe that there are some other ministry assignments that God has for me. A lot of times when I'm talking to people, they'll always ask me if I'm a preacher, and I get that. If I had a dollar for every time someone asked me that, I would be rich 10 times over. But I do, I understand that it's not just people saying that. I do believe that there's a call there, but I'm very sensitive to that. In 10 years, well, in the very near future, God has just opened up a door for me to get a PhD. And so I would have liked to have completed that, so it would be Dr. Myron Butler and not just the colloquialism doctor. How I would like to be remembered is someone that was able to capture the heart of God in song, someone that was a man of integrity and whose life speaks to the fact that it is possible to have character and have integrity and be the man that God has called you. Not perfect, but to be the man that God has called you to be. I think a lot of times I grew up in a single-parent home with just my mother, so I didn't have a tangible example of what a father looked like or what a husband looked like or even as other men that are in the gospel music business. I think a lot of times we see more examples of the marriage failing or of men not having integrity than we do the opposite. When having a successful marriage and being a man of integrity should be the norm. It's not. So I would like to be a tangible example of a man that did what God called him to do in the earth and did it with character and integrity. The song that I would say that speaks to me, there's a song that's on my latest project that was on the project before that as well. We decided to re-release it, the song entitled Simply Speak. And the song says, I shall have what I decree. Yes, I believe it belongs to me. So I'm going to speak into the atmosphere. I'm a firm believer that our words have power. We understand that death and life are in the power of the tongue, and that we have the power to literally open up our mouth and decree a thing. And if it is in agreement with the will of the Lord, then it shall come to pass. But a lot of times I see people that walk far beneath the purpose that God has called them. Sometimes, a lot of more times than not, I meet people that God has spoke things in their spirit, but they allow fear and, you know, the unknown and doubt to hinder them from walking in the purpose that God has called them to walk in. But if they would literally open up their mouth and begin to decree on earth what God has said in heaven, then it shall come to pass. So that song is really powerful. It's a powerful principle to me that I believe in. And so that would probably be that song that I would say.
Perfect. Well, I want to thank you for joining the program. Thank you for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And wish you many blessings in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share. I want to let all the viewers and people that subscribe and people that interact to know I'm on Twitter at Myron Butler. You can tweet me. It's me that responds back. It's not an automated response. On Facebook, it's Myron Butler as well. But more importantly and more directly, you can go to my website, myronbutler.com. You can kind of click and peruse through all that God has allowed me to do. You can, you know, send me a message there as well, and I'll respond back, whether it's a message about songwriting or a producer or an artist or just wanting to reach out and let me know how the records that I've done have affected your life. I love to stay connected to God's people, so I'm encouraging everybody to reach out.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Myron Butler.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This has been another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Thank you guys all for listening. And feel free to download this episode on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a great day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.